Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another great show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. Our own Ken Doherty previews the World Championship snooker coming up in the Crucible. Aaron Clark, founder of the Women's National League show, talks to us about that wonderful one-all draw that the Irish women had on Tuesday night against Sweden. And of course, George McDonagh will give us his lucky 15. David Kelly talks rugby, and we get into detail about the Munster team and where they're heading. And of course, Alan Cawley talks all things football. And Declan Drake and Sean Lane are in studio giving us a full preview of the upcoming championship. So you don't want to miss it. Download the show now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Great, yeah. That was some week last week of sport. There's no doubt about it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Just get your thoughts on the Masters. What a performance by Rory. Nearly getting there, but Scheffler was something else, wasn't he?
Yeah, something else. He decimated the field, and he had such a huge lead. And even though Rory, put together that amazing round at the end, it got very, very exciting, didn't it? And it was just a step too far, though. But Scheffler, like, from the start to finish, just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Incredible ability to just, not crack under that kind of pressure. It looked like maybe Smith was going to rattle him after the first two holes when he kind of came back at him. But then that chip in on the third just set the tone for the rest of the day. But it was really, really great stuff. Yeah. And Lowry did great, too. And even Seamus Power.
Yeah, he did.
From an Irish perspective, all good.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, it's just a special tournament, isn't it, with the crowds and the way the whole course is set up. It's just really, really special, and you'll always get some special performances. Great to see Tiger back as well. I mean, his first couple of rounds were brilliant. It was good to see him to be back at the Masters and the buzz he brings to the tournament. But Rory's round at the end was very, very special. It would be great if he could just start off like that. Like, he hadn't got a chance, from day one. And then he just shoot 6 or 8 under on the first day, and he'd be up and run again,
Okay, so there's no question about really enjoyable stuff.
Yeah.
And another great championship. But speaking of great championships, of course, it's that time of year again, and it's starting today. Mark Selby coming in, the defending champion, back to the Crucible, the famous Crucible for the World Championships, and you're right there in the middle of all the action.
Yeah, can't wait. Starts at 10 o'clock this morning. I'm down by commentary at 10. I'm on the other game. Zhao Xintong, who's the UK champion from China. He takes on Jamie Clark. That should be quite exceptional as well. But Mark Selby starts out against Jamie Jones, a Welsh qualifier, and it'll be interesting to see how he plays. I mean, he's had his mental health problems, unfortunately, over the last 6 months, and he hasn't played in the last few tournaments, so we haven't seen him play for at least maybe 2 months. So we don't know what to expect from Mark Selby. But I spoke to him last night. The good news is, he's been getting treatment and stuff like that, and he feels an awful lot better. And he's looking to be raring to go to defend his title. It should be a quite interesting championship. Ronnie O'Sullivan starts out this afternoon as well.
Yeah.
And the man on form, of course, is Neil Robertson, who's already won 4 tournaments this year. But yeah, exciting time. It's just great to be back in Sheffield for the championship. The crowds are going to be all back in as well. So it's going to be quite, a sort of a new sort of year with all the full crowd back, and it's going to be wonderful. I can't wait for it to start now, I must say.
You mentioned Ronnie there. Of course, he's chasing his 7th world title to equal Stephen Hendry's record. But it's a funny one with Ronnie. He's back in number one in the world, I think, now. But he kind of, you would have thought someone of his amazing ability would have been chasing harder to get that title and be the greatest, if you want. But it seems to just kind of not be the thing that Ronnie really wants. He doesn't really care whether he gets it or not, or certainly gives that impression.
Well, he gives that impression, Reg, but I don't believe a word of it. He sort of dismissed it. Like, he said, well, I've won everything else in the game. I don't really care whether I win the 7 world championship, but it's the only record that he needs to win a 7 to equal Stephen Hendry, who has the most 7 world championships. So it's the only one that he hasn't got. Every other record he's broken in the game, So I think he tries to deflect the pressure off himself, as if to say, I don't really care whether I get seven or not, you know. He said, you know, because I've done everything else. But believe you me, knowing Ronnie O'Sullivan for 30 years, I know he's determined as anything, I think, to get to at least seven and possibly go eight, you know. But I don't know whether he'll get there. You know, there's a lot of guys playing really, really well. But he is playing well, I must say. Over the last few months, he's looked an awful lot sharper. His game is definitely intact. And although he hasn't, he's only won one title this season, but he's been there or thereabouts, I think, in four or five finals, semi-finals and stuff like that. So that's why he's got back to world number one. But I think he's ready this year, I think, for seven, without a shadow of a doubt. You know? And he's got a good draw as well.
Yeah, well, the one that he's worried about, as are probably the rest of the players, is Neil Robertson, whose form is quite incredible at the moment. Would he be one of the absolute favourites?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I think he's won four tournaments this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he beat Higgins in the last one from 9-4 down to beat him 10-9. He's playing superb, as well as I think I've ever seen him. I think he's playing the best of his all time. And but he's only won it here once, and that was 2010. And since 2010, he's only been in one final. So it's sort of a poor sort of run to in at Sheffield, at the Crucible. He spoke openly that he doesn't like it. It's a little bit cramped. I mean, he is well over 6'4", and he thinks it's a little bit too cramped. It should be moved from the Crucible. I don't believe so. I think the Crucible for the World Championship is the best venue ever. But he sort of is outspoken about it, that we could get bigger crowds elsewhere. And maybe the fact that he doesn't like playing here is maybe one of the reasons why he hasn't won more than one World Championship. You know?
Who else should we watch out for? Who's the dark horses?
Well, believe it or not, I mean, I think like the class of 92, you've got Higgins and Williams in there as well. And they all turned pro. Higgins, Williams, O'Sullivan all turned pro the same year, 1992. And they're still at the top of the game. They're all in their mid-40s. And you've got to watch out for those three, I think. You know, Williams will be about 40-1. Higgins is probably about 16-1. So if you were going to go each way on those. And I tell you who qualified, who should have been in the top 16, but because of COVID and being back and forth in China quite a bit, is Ding Junhui.
Yeah.
He qualified, and you could get him at around 22-1. And I think he'd be a really good outsider bet as well.
Okay. What about Kieran Wilson? He always seems to fare well in this.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's got a very, very good record, but he's got Ding Junhui in the very first round because Ding Junhui was a qualifier. So he was the one probably everybody wanted to avoid. And Kieran Wilson has got him in the very first round. So that's going to be an absolute cracker. So whoever comes through that will have a really good chance. But Kieran Wilson, yeah, I think he's been to a couple of semi-finals and a final in his young, fledging career. So he loves it here at the Crucible, and he could be a dark horse as well.
Yeah, the other one, of course, that you've often mentioned to me, but has kind of failed to get there, even though he's world number four, is Judd Trump. He's won two championships, the Turkish Masters and the Champion of Champions this year. But again, it just never seems to happen for him on the Worlds.
Yeah, he's won it once. He beat Higgins in the final one year. But yeah, he's sort of disappointing over the last few seasons here. But and he hasn't. I mean, he's won two tournaments this season. But he has very indifferent form coming into the championship. So there's sort of a few little doubts about him. But I think he's a big time player. You know, he's a wonderful player. He's a great talent. He's great to watch, you know, and he plays these shots the way Jimmy White used to do all those years ago, you know, the entertainment sort of snooker type. And he'd be a big crowd favourite, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. But yeah, we're all excited, you know. Hazel is back as well. Hazel Irvine is back for the BBC. She's going to be presenting, because she's been stuck in New Zealand for the last like 3 years. So, it'd be good to have four back as well, you know. And as I said, it starts at 10 o'clock. I know, yeah. 25 years as well this year.
Yeah.
It's my 25th anniversary since I won it, which is quite incredible. It only seems like yesterday, you know.
Yeah, I know. It does only seem like yesterday. You're still milking it.
Yeah. I'm still milking it, and I keep reminding Stephen at every opportunity.
just a quick word before I let you go. What happened last week with United? Another loss.
Oh my God! Yeah, I was just talking to John Parrott there, who's a big Everton fan. He said, I've never seen Man United play as bad in my life. Like, you know, and he's right. It was just shocking. I thought the game with Liverpool and Man City was a cracking match, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. But the other United, they're in total disarray. It'd be interesting to see with this Ten Hag now what he's going to bring, what he's going to bring to United. And but he needs a big clear out. You know, he needs a big, big clear out there, I tell you.
Time to turn our attention to football, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Aaron Clark, the founder of the Women's National League show. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you? Not too bad.
Good, good. I'm great. Yeah, the weather is picking up nicely. It feels like we're starting to get into the beginning of summer, and sport is going really well. And on Tuesday night, I was pretty impressed with what I saw as well. It looked like Katie McCabe had done the job for us against Sweden, and we were getting a bit excited, but unfortunately, they managed to pull one back in the 79th minute with Asilani. But still a brilliant performance by Ireland, and probably a little bit of a surprise result away from home.
You know what, I'm not going to lie, I was in the ground, I was in Gothenburg on Tuesday, and the place was absolutely rocking. The Swedes were in real party mode before the game started, you know, because a point was good enough for them to qualify for the World Cup, so they were thinking, right, job done, we've conceded one goal in the campaign, we haven't lost the game, we haven't drawn a game, you know, we're going to go through, we'll wrap this up tonight, easy enough. And then, you know, when you look at the reverse fixture, they got a bit of luck after the deflection off Louise Quinn to score to win 1-0, you know. And then with when Katie takes the shot, it's Magnus Eriksson fouls Denise O'Sullivan, and the build up pulls the hair, and Eriksson's the one who the deflection comes off for the goal. So it's a bit of a, you know, a bit of one of them. And yeah, we take a little bit of luck. You come into half time and you can see like the stadium has gone into a massive lull, and The longer it was going, you could see the Swedish fans were getting frustrated, the players were getting frustrated. You'll just have to look at what they've done with the bench. They emptied the bench nearly as much as they could just to try and get a response, and when the goal did come, it was heartbreaking. But you could see the Irish players at that stage were starting to tire a little bit, you know. They were just giving absolutely everything. A big shout, you know. You have to mention the likes of Megan Connolly, who hasn't played centre-back in a long time, played centre-back for Ireland with Savannah McCarthy injured, and then Chloe Mustaki, a left fullback, made her first international start. So players in not experienced positions, and you know, we're not a lot of experience coming into that side, and then we're absolutely sublime. I think Courtney Brosnan in goal was probably a little bit unlucky not to get the RT man player of the match, because she was absolutely fantastic. She pulled off some unbelievable saves. We rode her luck at times, a couple of headers that they had that went above, plus the shot that hit the crossbar. But you know what, in football you have to ride your luck. When the luck is going your way, you have to take it. But in terms of what you said about probably a surprise result, to be honest with you, the previous day when we were chatting to Vera in the press conference, all she said is, she said, if we get the result wasn't the main thing. The result was that every player went out and left absolutely everything on the pitch. Mm. If it was good enough, it was good enough. If it wasn't, we could leave Sweden proud that we gave absolutely everything. You know, they're the second ranked team in the world. Yeah. They're an Olympic silver medalist. It's probably going to go down as the greatest women's result of all time. Yeah. You know, you look at the draw against the Netherlands 5 years ago. Netherlands had won the Euros, but they were still an up-and-coming country. Mm. But this was just astronomical, and I think it's a massive bonus point coming into the rest of the campaign with only 3 games to go.
Yeah, well, that's true. You mentioned 3 games to go, but it's a good thing because the others have only got 2. And, you know, we're sitting there in third place on 8 points, but you'd have to fancy, and I mean, I don't want to get carried away here or too excited, but with Slovakia and Georgia, they're that bit weaker than us, you know, in Finland, you'd have to fancy the chances of shooting up the table with 3 games to go.
To be honest with you, Reggie, in the situation that we're in now, if we don't make the playoff, you'd be extremely disappointed. Mm. You're right in what you're saying. We beat Georgia 11-0 at home the last time.
Yeah.
But then we've got Finland to come to us, and then we've got Slovakia away. The biggest thing is that if you look at Finland's last 2 games, Finland have got ourselves, and then they've got Sweden at home after that. Your only concern is there, you know, the Scandinavian little pact that Sweden would be happy to play out a draw if that's all Finland needed. That's your only real concern. But in terms of the actual fixtures, everything's in our own hands. That's all you can ask for. The big game is going to be the 1st of September, obviously, when Finland come to Dublin. I know there's a lot of talk lately about should this game be played in the Aviva Stadium or should it be in Tala Stadium. I'm actually one of the ones that say don't move it. I think if you move it, you're potentially going to take the girls away from having some of their advantages that they have had. You know, a packed Tala Stadium, a massive atmosphere. We've seen what it was like in Helsinki and what it was like in Gothenburg, you know, with the home fans. Where if you go to the Aviva Stadium, the girls have never played there before. Is it adding extra pressures there, adding extra layers that maybe isn't needed? Yes, I'd love to see them playing the Aviva. There's no doubt about that. But I think the timing could be better, for example, with a friendly against the USA or a friendly against England, where they'll generate a massive crowd. Yeah. I just think making the move for the Finland game, that the calls are there, is a massive gamble, and you want to have things how you're used to, how you're settled, you know. And to be honest with you, walking away from Gothenburg, just thinking, wow, how much this team has even come on in the last year.
Yeah,
you know, you're just looking at the fact of when we went on a run of seven defeats in a row, a lot of them against higher friendlies, a lot of them against higher opposition and things like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Australia game was a little bit of a click. We lost to Sweden on the start of the campaign, finished third in the Pinatar Cup, which was huge. And you can just see the crest of momentum that this team are getting at the moment. But the biggest thing is, even if we are to make a playoff is complicated. So, you know, we're still a long way from potentially talking about our first major competition. And I think, as Katie summed it up perfectly during the night after the game, she said, all attention turns to June. They didn't want to get distracted of talking about Finland in September. Yeah. The big one is now Finland, Georgia, the 27th of June in Georgia. So, you know, 3 points off that, then we can look at what's to come in September.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's it's exciting. That's the only way to describe it. Personally, I would agree with you. I think you keep your home advantage, you keep that intimidating atmosphere, going to a bit of a, like, you know, there'll be a big crowd there, but it won't fill the stadium. There's no question about it. And that
prime example being in your field of, like, the likes of Connacht playing Leinster in the Euro Champions Cup last week. Connacht wanted that game in the already in Showgrounds. They didn't want to move it anywhere else.
Absolutely.
Because they knew
Absolutely. That's
their raucous atmosphere.
That's what you want. You want your crowd, your home support around you. You want the thing that you used to. And also, you want to feel comfortable in your surroundings. And then you can just get straight into it without feeling a little bit deer in the headlights. But moving on, just I have to ask you about the comments that were made by Kenny Shields. There's been a lot of conversation about it during the week, obviously. Some players coming out disappointed. Stephanie Roach, you know, for example, saying that she felt that Kenny Shields' comments that girls and women are more emotional than men didn't sound good. It didn't come across well. You're dealing in that area of the game. You're talking on radio shows about it. Is it like, first of all, is it such a bad thing that women are more emotional than men?
It's a tough one. And the biggest thing here is that I think Kenny was talking about his own side. He wasn't talking about women in general. Like, you've seen the Northern Ireland captain come out the day after and sort of put a statement out to say it was along them lines. Did he get his words slightly mixed the way he wanted to say it? Potentially, there's no doubt about it, it come across horrific.
Yeah.
And there's no two ways about it. But, like, he's probably talking about his own players, because if you look at Ireland in particular, if the comments stand towards even the Irish women's team, the heads would have dropped when they conceded the goal against Sweden on the 79th minute, but they didn't. You know, they were straight focused, straight back into what they needed to do. I get where he's coming from, because, you know, Northern Ireland have been in that sort of position before where they score, they can skid the goal, they concede another and another and another. You know, they've come from a position where they were struggling massively to Kenny's gone in there and made massive work. It doesn't do the women's game great justice, to be honest. But
yeah, but you know, Aaron, sorry to cut across you there, but funnily enough, when I heard it, I completely understand where people are coming from with the emotion, because straight away the relationship there is that's a weakness. Do you know what I mean?
And it's
not always a weakness, by the way, to be emotional, because men can be emotional too. If you look at plenty of tennis players have lost the rag over the years, and golfers, and team sports as well, and I've seen it firsthand. But I actually see it as a failing of coaching, because if you've identified that this is a problem, your job as a coach is to fix that problem, make sure it doesn't happen. And if you haven't, then you failed as a coach. I see it from a different way.
Yeah, I get that absolutely. And, like, you know, I knew he wasn't, when he said it, I knew he didn't mean to say it as if to have a dig at the women's game as such. More, he was having it because he'd identified something. Mm. You know, that's the way. But the problem is these are the comments, as soon as they're picked up, you know, they're going to go everywhere. That's the big problem. And, you know, I'm glad to see the Northern Ireland girls just come out and said, hey, listen, he didn't mean it in that way. I've had dealings with Kenny Shields through covering League of Ireland games before, and Kenny, anytime I've dealt with Kenny, Kenny's been great. You know, I've never had a bad thing to say about Kenny Shields. I think a lot of people would speak highly of him as well. So it was just, potentially phrased a little bit wrong. But that was it. But he's identified something that he's working on to fix with Northern Ireland. And he's right, because if they go out like that against England in the Euros, for example, when they played him in Southampton, concede one and then drop the heads like that, they could concede 5, 6, 7. And that's what he's sort of trying to plug that gap to stop. But it's, it was just said slightly wrong, I think.
Yeah, it probably could have been phrased better. So overall, before I let you go, then, you're feeling pretty confident about the women's team, and we're saying we should progress.
We've come on massively.
Yeah.
For me, if we don't progress from here, it'll be a disappointment. But I know Finland is going to be a massive game. Slovakia as well will be massive, because Slovakia have taken points off us and Finland.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough, but, you know, you have to be confident, and especially considering how far they've come along and how much improvements they've made in the last year, that we're a completely different side. So we don't go into these games no more fearing the opposition. We go in there knowing that we can get something out of every game we play in. So, you know, it's a positive. Everything around the women's team is great. The sponsorships that are coming in, everything is, you know, it's fantastic and a massive high.
Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very good. Declan's in studio with us here as well this morning. A little bit of a derby last night, and Rovers coming out on top 1-0 against Pats.
Yeah, big win for them, Reggie. Fully deserved by all accounts as well. And I suppose you look at the result in Derry, it was a good night for Shamrock Rovers, really. And it's a good victory. I watched them last Friday against Shelburne, and they were very good as well, in fairness to them. I suppose the one criticism people might label them at the moment, and maybe comparing them to other champions, is they're not killing teams off, scoring 2 and 3 at the moment, but they're still getting the job done. And that was a big result in front of a huge crowd in Tala as well last night, Reggie. Yeah,
absolutely. And as you said, mentioned there, Shelburne going away. Damien Duff would be delighted, because, as we said, Derry City were the ones to watch this year. And yeah, losing at home 2-1 to Shelburne, that's a massive blow for Derry.
Yeah, it's a big blow. But to be fair, I suppose if you were to say to Rory Higgins at the start of the season, after 10 games, he'd be sitting on top 3 points ahead of Shamrock Rovers, I'm sure he would have taken that. He would have been over the moon with that start. The fact that they were on such a good run of form, though, against a team who was obviously down near the bottom, and Shelburne have been hit and miss so far this season, they would have fancied their chances in the Brandywell last night, and they went 1-0 up as well. So they'd be very disappointed with that, not to come away with the 3 points or even a point. So, but in terms of Shelburne, it's an absolutely massive result, Reggie. As I say, I watched them against Shamrock Rovers last week, and they're very much a work in progress, to be fair to them. We mentioned that last week on the show. It's a whole new squad that Damien Duff has basically put in place since he's taken over, and it has been very inconsistent, which you would expect. But I do feel as though they'll get better as the season goes on, and the more times that these relationships with the new players have kind of have had time to bed in. But to go away, they've shown huge character. Their form away from home is very good, actually. I think they're the second most formed team in the league away from home. If they can sort out their home form, they'll soon rise up the table. But I think overall, Damien Duff will be absolutely delighted with that result. It's a huge result.
Yeah, absolutely. And another great result as well for a team that have been struggling of late, against a team that we've been watching and talking about well, Sligo. Dundalk beating them 2-1 at home last night. So a big result for Dundalk, puts them up to third as well.
Yeah, up to third, and they're going about their business nice and quietly. There's not too much focus on them. Obviously, Stevie O'Donnell went in at the start of the year. We all know the past glories that Stephen has had, obviously, with Dundalk. And I certainly felt it was a crazy decision on his part to leave. But who are we to say that when you think of, I suppose, the relationship he has with the Dundalk people and the club up there. And he, as I say, he's going about his business nice and quietly. They've moved up to third now. That was a big victory at home. But Sligo Rovers have been so disappointing over the last couple of weeks. When you think of a good start that they got off the Reggie, and I think they've only picked up one in their last 12 now, 1 point in their last 12, which is a dreadful return, really, especially when you think they've played 2 or 3 of the teams down near the bottom. And that point was against UCD in a 2-2 draw, which they should have lost as well. So the wheels have come off there. I'm not sure what's going on. I wasn't too optimistic at the start of the season about Sligo Rovers anyway, even though they got off to a good start. I don't think their recruitment has been great in the off-season, and I think that's what's coming through now. But certainly from a Dundalk point of view and Stevie O'Donnell, as I say, they're going about their business nice and quietly. They're just hovering in those kind of European positions. And I think if they were to finish in those European positions, that would be a good return and something for Stevie to build on then, maybe in terms of a title challenge come next year. But a big result for them.
Alan, good morning to you. It's Declan here.
Morning, Declan.
How are you doing? Just going back to Rovers and Pats and looking at it from a Pats perspective last night. Very, very disappointing again. Lacking any kind of cut and thrust in the final third. Something which greatly disappointed manager Tim Clancy afterwards. The utilisation of Owen Doyle. They don't seem to be using him in the right kind of way, I think, anyway, this season, because he's only scored two goals since he's come back, which were against Finn Harps and UCD. Very ineffective last night against Rovers, as indeed were a lot of his teammates, it must be said, and ultimately he got replaced. So Tim has got to sort a few things out there, and quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think when we looked at it, and especially given the start that they had as well, Declan, we were hoping that they may be able to mount some sort of a challenge. I felt this year was probably more about just consolidating the European position for themselves, especially after the upheaval in the off-season and the change of manager and players as well. But when you see the likes of Owen Doyle coming in and the players that they signed, Mark Doyle as well from Drogheda, we're thinking that they might be able to do something. But certainly it's been a bit kind of hot and cold with them at the moment, and as you say, Tim has to sort out a few issues, especially with Owen Doyle, because as you well know, following Swindon and Owen's career, sure, he scored goals everywhere he's gone, and people were expecting him to score goals at Pats as well, and as you say, he's only scored two against Finn Harps and UCD, which has been bitterly disappointing for them, because if they are to mount the challenge or consolidate those European positions, you need him scoring goals. So I'm not sure if it's the makeup of the team or the formation or the setup playing the three up top, and he's not getting enough chances, I'm not so sure. But Tim will be disappointed, especially when they're toothless like that against Shamrock Rovers. But it's a tough place to go, as you know as well, Declan. Shamrock Rovers are obviously the best team in the country. And it is tough to get a victory in Tala. But he certainly does have a couple of things to sort out.
Well, certainly, I mean, they're playing UCD on Easter Monday. But one thing they didn't do last night was just get enough quality ball into the box. And, you know, that, if you don't do that, you're not going to win football matches anyway.
Yeah, and if to go back to the point about Owen Doyle, if you're not going to get balls into the box, he has no chance of scoring goals. That's where you want them, obviously. And as I said, he scored goals everywhere he's been. So if the rest of the team are not creating chances for him, it certainly makes it very difficult for him. And I know there's probably a lot of responsibility resting on his shoulders as well to get the goals. And sometimes I feel as well, even when you come back like that, because I know Owen was very keen to come back and he wanted to come back to the league in a position where he's still able to contribute and offer plenty, and he's in very good nick and looks after himself. So it could be a case of maybe he's trying too hard himself, Declan, and putting a bit of too much pressure on himself to score all those goals. So it could be kind of a combination of two or three things, but certainly at the moment, Pats will be disappointed, as I say, to be as toothless as they are. But they have a good opportunity now against UCD to maybe even get a few goals, but I think the most important thing is get a victory. But if they can score three or four goals and get confidence up as well, that might be huge for them.
Alan, I spoke earlier to Aaron Clark of the Women's National League show, and we were talking about Tuesday night, and what a brilliant result that was for the women against Sweden. It looked like they might even hang on till the end, a 79th minute goal depriving them of the win, but a draw, a great result away from home.
Yeah, I covered the game, Reggie, and it was absolutely fantastic. I've been watching this women's team now kind of over the last 18 months to 2 years covering the campaigns, and they've really improved game on game, and you look at the confidence that they have as well, and to go away to Sweden. And the one thing I felt people were suggesting going into the game, that obviously Sweden, the second best ranked team in the world, and it was going to be very, very difficult, and people were fearful, but they've been very well organised and well structured in how they've approached the game so far. So I never felt as though they were in any danger maybe getting a hammering, and I felt they were in with a chance to score the goal, and obviously they were fortuitous with the deflection, but to score the goal was absolutely brilliant, because I'm sure Vera Powell would have been delighted to even win nil all at half time. But that gave them something to hang on to. Courtney Brosnan, the goalkeeper, was fantastic, and there was a bit of debate before the start of the campaign about who's going to be the number one, but she certainly nailed down that position now, and that performance of hers was fantastic. But I think as a collective, the whole team contributed massively, and you should mention Chloe Mustaki, who's been through a lot in her personal life in terms of not only injury through football, but some serious illness in her personal life as well. And to get her first competitive start against Sweden and put in the performance that she did as well, I thought definitely she was fantastic. And they've put themselves in a great position now, Reggie, to obviously make the playoffs. It's in their own hands now. And who knows after that, if you were to get a kind draw But as I say, there's huge momentum behind the women's team now, and they've been growing game on game, and it's great to see.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Dave Kelly of the Irish Independent. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie, my kid. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. Look, as a Leinster fan, we're sitting in a comfortable position here with a job done last night. But again, I suppose, we don't need to get into too much detail about the game. It was a 56-20 victory. Connacht put up a gallant performance in the sports ground the week before, but it was never really going to be anywhere different than what happened last night, with a clear win for them. But I suppose the conversation then leads itself to maybe what I would call a bit of a gulf opening up between Leinster and the other provinces, and how dangerous that is at the moment. And where is it all going to end, David? Where is it all going to end?
Well, just a couple of things. I presume a man of your exalted status was using the royal we. I want to confirm the record, I'm not a Leinster fan. And secondly, if you haven't had a cup of coffee yet, pour yourself a strong one. There has been a considerable gulf between Leinster and the rest of Ireland for many, many, many years. There have been slight punctuations, like Pat Lam's extraordinary coup to win the Pro 14 title, as then was, when Leinster slumbered slightly. But from my mind, that the two arguably best players, I mean, James Lowe, the standard that he produced yesterday is expected. He's appalling man of the match and star of the match, or person of the match, or even ratings, which are an appalling endeavour, which I try to avoid as much as possible, despite the fact that players secretly admire and love them and crave the respect for some reason. I'm not too sure why. But I thought two of the best performers yesterday were actually Ross Maloney and Josh Murphy, Dr. Josh, who is Western bound, ironically, and to the best of my knowledge, I think Ross may have been in a squad, but they're both, I think they were the only two uncapped players yesterday, which demonstrates the considerable gulf in standards, which is, you know, our great friend David Nusafora in the high throne of Lansdowne Road, surveying all as good and bad about Irish rugby, is trying to amend by ordering them into their cars to go westbound to Galway to try and close that gap. I mean, my worry would be the gap between Connacht and Ulster and Munster is arguably more serious. The gap between Munster and Leinster is arguably more serious. Leinster's brilliance, the latterly acquired, I mean, we all saw Mick Dawson leaving recently. It took them about 5 or 6 years, and you were there for a lot of them, all of them. They went through 5 or 6 years of cocking up their status as potentially the best club team in the world, which they eventually arrived at. They were a bit amateurish for a while and didn't know what they were doing, but they finally got there. And other provinces, for various reasons, Connacht is due to more to geography, population and resources. Munster, Ulster haven't had the excuses, and their failures, I think, are the real scandal of Irish rugby in the last 10 years, despite a couple of success stories and maybe the fruits that finally Ulster and Munster have sorted out trying to get decent young players through their system.
Yeah,
but the gap has always been there for the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Would I agree that it's been as long as 10 years? I mean, Ulster have been
okay. 15 years then.
Ulster have been notoriously underperforming. They do have good resources and they do have a good setup up there, and it should be better than it is. There's no question about that. But Munster have put teams out that have performed. And I hear what you're saying. I know they haven't had a trophy in 10 years, but, like, you know, why has it gotten to this stage? And, I mean, even now, I mean, Graham Rowntree played against them, known well, great guy, all the rest of it. But it stinks of, he's there, so it's handy. Just put him in as the head coaching job. It doesn't feel like something that was planned, put through a process and thought through, you know. But that seems to have been the case for a lot of what Munster have done for the last 4 or 5 years. And it's just to me, mind-boggling that that would be the case for a province that has the history that it does.
Yeah, well, and there are a couple of things here. You've got to remember that everyone in Irish rugby owes their allegiance and obeisance to the great uncrowned king of Irish rugby, David Nusifora, a situation which may change with either him deigning to step from his throne and perhaps Kevin Potts and the new wave of Blazers, who they're not really Blazers anymore, they're kind of sharp Louis Costello business suits. If they kind of maybe retrieve a little bit more control of the situation, because if you take the Munster situation as a microscopic thing, and listen, everybody has to start sometime. You were a crap radio broadcaster before you started radio broadcasting, and then you became a very good one. So nobody knows what they can do until they try it. Graham Rowntree is now 50, and you know he's seen a lot of services, you know, on the field and off it in terms of coaching Lions. So same with Andy Farrell, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, everyone deserves a chance to start. But the process of it, I mean, baffled me. You go back to the second South African in a row to say he might stay and then decide not to stay despite signing a contract. I mean, that's awkward enough. But the fact that the contract that was put in front of Johan van Graan was placed in front of his desk by David Nusifora in the RFU head office.
Yeah.
So they obviously thought, despite what experts like you and inexperts like me thought, that this guy wasn't the guy for the job. They thought, or he thought, I'm not sure, too sure if there's a they behind David Nusifora, but he thought that he was the best man for the job. Nobody objected. Everybody in Munster kind of nodded their heads politely and didn't say boo to a goose, never mind a swan. And they proceeded on. Johan van Graan obviously thought that a bath with no water was a better option for him to plunge into. So off he went, bringing a few South Africans with him and a couple of out-of-favour players. And then months, started with days, weeks, months of speculation and weekly ennui in terms of Johan van Graan not saying very much, not that he does anyway, Graham Rowntree not saying very much, not that he says much anyway. And nobody knew what was going on. The province, they are still in Europe. They will progress today, but they're floundering in the URC, not really looking like they're going to challenge for a trophy there. And not really looking like they're going to challenge for a trophy in Europe, let's be fair, because they never have in the last 5 or 6 years. Nothing's going to change there. It was intimated there was an exhaustive process going on. I remember back in the day when Munster wanted to be the best in the world, looking all over the world. The fact that the delighted and Graham Rowntree is not necessarily an indication that it was a bad result, you'd wonder what the trawl around the world looked like. You wonder what people said or who they rejected. Did they reject Scott Robertson, for example? Did they reject him? Did he reject Munster? It'd be interesting to see how many people said, no, thanks very much, I'll leave it. I mean, I've written before that everyone says Ronan O'Gara should go to Munster. My argument is that Munster is not ready for Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's not going for a reason. I mean, I think we would have heard. I think we would have heard about it, David, if there were other names in the pot that they had been toying with. I think it would
indeed
have been out and heard.
Yeah.
It. And we haven't heard any of that. And I mean, I suppose,
and that's kind of worrying. It's kind of sad, really.
That's the, but I'm saying, that is the point. I mean, once upon a time, Munster was the greatest job. It was seen one of the greatest jobs in world rugby to get. There's no question about that. That was, they were right up there with the elite. And now they've slipped down to a point where people are looking at it as a bit of a poison chalice and saying, no, I'm not going there. And including
the other problem is they might have wanted the elite. Just say, for example, Scott Robertson said, listen, I spent 2 years at Ronan O'Gara. He told me what a cool place this is.
Yeah.
You know, let's go for it. Munster, brilliant. They look at the pot. They have no money. They're in debt to the RFU. That's why Ed Sheeran is moving matches, never mind the GAA, he's moving matches in Thomond Park because, you know, they haven't got the proverbial to do the proverbial. So that's the other issue, that they actually probably didn't. And I'm not saying Graham Rowntree is an economic necessity, but it's an economic factor. He was already in the house, and the boys up in Lansdowne Road just maybe add on another few quid and give him a Toyota Camry instead of a Volkswagen Golf. it's hard to know.
I know what you're saying, David, but there's definitely a feeling, because I've spoken to people from around Munster, there's definitely a feeling that there's no backbone in the province at the moment in terms of just standing up and saying, you know what, we need to go right back. I mean, I'm looking at some of the younger players that Munster have, and they've got some serious talent there, you know.
Yeah.
The likes of Casey and Coombs and all the names we can go through, they're the ones that seem to have stood up. And to be fair, away to Exeter, that was a good result, a very good result. And I fancied them to go on and beat Exeter in the next stage of this. So, it's not all bad around Munster. But there's a real feeling that, you know, it's time now to just stop and reset entirely and go back to, they've got great coaches like Prendergast, O'Gara, O'Connell's with the Irish team.
McNamara.
The names go on and on and on. They're outside. Gerry Flannery, another class coach who was let get out of the system. Go back to what they know, and go back to people that know Munster, and go back to people and players, the young players coming through, that are the lifeblood and backbone of what Munster is all about. It feels like it needs it. There's too much outside influence at the moment.
Yeah, but they obviously thought this was the way to go initially in terms of on the field, to follow the South African template, which, you know, it gets you to a certain level if you have a certain level of players. But thus far, no further. I mean, you do need both style and substance to win at the highest level. Munster couldn't really get the right marriage between both. And even when they try, and you saw it even last week when they tried to attack, you know, if you haven't done something in a long time, or if you've never been given the tools to do it, or the faith or the confidence, you can't just start playing attacking rugby, you know, within months, I would argue, never mind within kind of days or within weeks. And even off the field as well, there's been an incipient, and again, you talk to Munster people, I would talk to them. I made a rare appearance at an AIL game recently, and you talk to, you know, like the League of Ireland, that's the real grassroots. That's why I'm not a Leinster fan. I'm a club fan, because that precedes the provincial game. And that's not a rant against amateurism. It's just my own opinion about most sports. I'm club first. And they were speaking of a disconnect then in Munster in terms of, you know, the people who've come in to run it in the off-field scenario, that there's a disconnect between the clubs and Munster, which, you know, it's not possible anymore, but the clubs did build the Munster brand in terms of the professional age and those initial Heineken Cups when they did what everyone thought Leinster should be doing. They were the standard bearers for Irish rugby. You can't necessarily reclaim those days again, because club rugby can never be the next stage or the fundamental building block for professional rugby, but it can be an addendum. You use that alongside the club system and intelligent recruitment, and just Munster haven't been able to do all that perfectly well. And listen, there is an argument for Donal Lenehan, Declan Kidney, all these great minds, these great brains, to come back in and with their passion, but also their intelligence. It's not just, you know, it's not just getting Munster and dialing up, you know, the last Rolex of the Munster heroes and legends, and, you know, expect it all to happen. I mean, you need smarts with this. You're dealing with the best minds all across Europe, you know, in terms of on and off the field, and I don't think they've got that balance right. Listen, Leinster did it eventually. It took them a while.
Yeah,
Mick Dawson, you know, fell in his ample rare ribeye steak backside a few times in the early days, and, you know, we had the Gary Ellis stuff and fellas like you, maybe, you know, pulling down his pants once or twice. So listen, they had a few pratfalls, but eventually got there, because once you get it right on and off the field, and you have that, you know, market, and Munster do have that market. They talk about communions and confirmations, which is kind of rubbish. They should be filling out that stadium if they're getting things right on and off the field, but they haven't. They're not there yet.
Yeah, it's disappointing, because Irish rugby needs them. That's the reality of it. And, you know, I'm obviously a Leinster man and a Leinster fan, but I know the importance of Munster rugby, and I miss the great rivalries that were there once upon a time. They don't feel they're there anymore. And that isn't in any way gloating. I'm actually lamenting it, because I think that we've lost something.
Sport needs rivalries. Yeah.
Declan Drake and Sean Lane on the GAA section for the next 15 minutes or so. And yes, it's championship time once again. Just saying to Sean outside a little earlier on, this time last year, collective training had just restarted and we were a month away from the start of the National Leagues at that stage. So what a difference a year can make. Plenty of championship chat coming up with Sean in the next few minutes, but some domestic housekeeping in the capital. First of all, we say well done to our under 20 footballers who qualified for the semi-final of the Airgrade under 20 Leinster Championship on Thursday night. 115-110 winners over Westmeath. Certainly didn't have it all their own way, that's for sure. 9 points down at one stage, 7 at the break, but they recovered well to maintain their championship dream for 2022. And staying with football but switching to ladies, we say congratulations to Niamh McAvoy and best wishes as well to the St. Sylvester's lady who announced her retirement from inter-county football during the course of the week. One of a select group of ladies in the game in the capital, with no fewer than all 5 All-Ireland medals, the first of them won back in 2010. An All-Star, a National League winner as well, and of course she had some time in Australia. Fantastic athlete, gifted footballer, and a very nice lady as well. So Niamh, the very best of luck to you in your retirement. I'm sure you'll enjoy watching the girls over the next number of years. But now we are going to turn our attention to Championship 2022. Yes, you can hear the voice raising. It's the smell of the fresh cut grass and the long evenings. This is what GAA people live for, I can tell you. Delighted to be joined in studio by our man on the inside line this afternoon. He's picked the top of the right for this afternoon's and this weekend's contests indeed. A very good morning once again to our regular analyst, Sean Lane. Conas a tattoo, Sean.
Oh, come on, come on.
Good stuff.
I'm really looking forward to the weekend, Declan, with all the hurling matches, yeah.
Like I say, you know, the smell of the fresh cut grass, the long evenings, you just can't beat it, can you? And the heart does beat that little bit faster when it comes to this time of the year in championship.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between league and championship and the expectation and everybody getting dressed up and going for the matches. I think we talked outside, there's probably 40,000 going to Páirc Cliath for a round robin match. It's just fantastic. And I think people missed games with COVID over the last couple of years, so no more than I'm like a child. I think I can't wait to get to Parnell Park this evening with Emma and cheer on the Dubs.
Christmas Eve for all hurling aficionados, isn't it really, or Christmas Day in a sense, because Dublin are out this evening in their first championship game of 2022. Laois are the visitors to Parnell Park. It's a 6:30 start there in Donnycarney. The Dublin team was released last night, Sean, ahead of this game with the Midlanders, and some interesting selection choices made by Matty Kenny.
Yeah, I just saw the team there last night, Declan, and look, firstly congratulations to Davy Keogh from the Thomas Davis Club. He's picked at centre forward, Dunnock O'Ryan at wing back from the Bridget's Club, and Johnny Bellew from Lucan, who've over the years have supplied, you know, some greats, and the Johnny McCaffreys and people like that down through the years, and we've Chris Crummy there. So the very best of luck to them. It's the one thing that Matty did say, that he was going to give people a run. He's given them a run and he's picked 3 of them to start today. So, look, we've said this about Matty. He actually does what he says. It says what it is on the tin. He gave people a run and he's picked them to start in the championship, and it's great to see.
When you talk about Luke and Sarah's greats, of course, you can't leave out the great Peter Kelly, an All-Star winner. Of course, Peter will be first man on the phone. You didn't give me the mention, Deck. Well, there you are, Peter. We have mentioned you now. Hope that you will see you perhaps later in Parnell. Now, it is Laois in the first game, Sean. They met recently in the last round of the league, which was a game which had significance from a Dublin perspective because they needed to win to maintain their outside chance of a semi-final berth in the league. Now, ultimately, that didn't happen. But what lessons have we learned from the Laois game, do you think, overall, particularly in defence?
Yeah, I suppose, Declan, when you look at the score, I mean, we conceded 120-something, so that's a very, very high score in it. Now we put Laois away well and won by 7 or 8 points, but as you say, on the day we needed to win by a lot more to qualify for the league semi-final. We'll definitely have to tighten up, you know. I think looking at the championship overall, Waterford would be top team because they're getting goals. So one thing that we've talked about on this programme before, you know, and you challenged me very early on in the programme where Dublin had conceded 2 goals in each of the first 2 games, we seem to have got rid of that. So I just think with the games that are coming up in the championship, we need to go back, tighten it up, close down space, keep the free count down, etc. And you know, I genuinely believe we have the scoring forwards to win some big games in the round robin championship coming up.
choice of goalkeeper?
Yeah, look, at I suppose the one for the future has to be Sean Brennan, so I'd compliment Matty on that. Who's the best? I mean, put it this way, we're hoping Sean Brennan will be the best this evening at 6:30 till 8 o'clock. A smashing young lad, smashing goalkeeper, as is Nolie. But look at, he's made his decision. I'm not surprised with the decision. And look at, Sean Brennan is a smashing goalie. There's not too many club goalies in Dublin have two All-Ireland Club Championship medals, and he has them, you know.
Nobody, I'd say. Only, only him.
Nobody is right.
So far, anyway.
So far.
Unless our 2022 champions, whoever they might be in a few months' time, can kick on when that competition resumes. But the importance of getting a win in your first game, particularly at home against a team like Laois, can't be underestimated, particularly when you consider that next up is a trip to Chadwick's Wexford Park to face Wexford next weekend.
Yeah, and look, Declan, there's six teams in it, and this is no disrespect to Laois and no disrespect to Westmead. The three teams that will come out will be between Kilkenny, Galway, Wexford and Dublin. You know, Dublin will have to beat Laois and probably beat them well, because this could come down to scoring difference as well. They'll have to beat Westmead as well. But in between, they have a huge game against Wexford. But they need to forget about that now. They need to go out tonight. They're playing a championship match. They need to, you know, not let what happened before. If you remember, we were here and they got beaten by Laois in the championship. We were here another day. We had Ballacolla bet out the gate by Kilmacud Crokes. That didn't happen either.
Well, sorry, you did. I've good friends around that area of Laois, so I wouldn't be that disrespectful
enough,
to them.
But what we do know about Cheddar Plunkett, the manager of Laois, is that the one game that he had his eyes set on was the game against Antrim, and they beat him in the league. So he has some good forwards, you know, Willie Dunphy, Chad Warr, Paddy Purcell. We need to take this game really serious. We need to, you know, get a good result and get 2 points on the board this evening.
As long as we're all coming out of Parnell Park with a smile on our face at about 8 o'clock this evening. So best of luck to Matty and the Dublin boys there this evening. 6:30 start against Laois. Now moving on, some cracking games to look forward to as well over the course of the weekend. In our group as well, you've got Wexford and Galway, Sean, and Henry Shefflin's championship debut as Galway manager. Wexford impressed in the league after a poor Walsh Cup campaign. How do you see this one panning out tonight?
This is going to be a huge game. I think the home advantage will obviously suit Wexford. Galway, they won 3 of their 5 league games, but they were no way impressive. But the one good game they did have under their belt was the Limerick game away, and they had some fantastic things. And I just read up on it last night, even though I watched the game live. They got the last 7 points in that game. So that was a night that Henry got the forwards right. They were tackling, etc., etc. Now, the following week, they went out and they lost at home to Wexford. But, you know, from a Wexford point of view, like, they conceded 5 goals against Waterford, looked very bad. But having said that, they won their 5 league games. So which Wexford team is going to come out? The one thing, and I said it here last week, Rory O'Connor for Wexford in the National League was absolutely outstanding. If he stands up along with Lee Chin and Conor McDonald, I can see a Wexford win here tonight.
I think Lee Chin is on the bench, isn't he?
Yeah,
so
he is,
that's
yeah.
An interesting one. But what a man to be able to bring in. So Galway,
I would like
Wexford
to be the back that he out the field where he gets someone, then he's coming in to mark me.
No, indeed. In a word, Galway or Wexford from that one, Sean?
I would go with Wexford. I just think that Galway haven't been consistent, and you know, I think that you know, that they'll need a couple of years to get it right.
Yeah, just writing this down. Sean Lane says Wexford to beat Galway. All this will be played back to you next week. You can be
That's
sure
okay.
of that. That's the beauty of being on this side of the microphone, you see, and you're the man who's answering all the difficult questions. Now, speaking of difficult questions, Munster Championship comes alive tomorrow afternoon. Two blockbusters. Cork versus Limerick at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Cork went all the way to the league final, got beaten by Waterford, conceding goals along the way, which was their Achilles heel, if you like. Limerick, not very impressive in the league by any stretch of the imagination. If you're Kieran Kingston, the Cork manager, how do you approach tomorrow's game?
Well, I had a good look at the tape, and I've watched it 3 times now. And in particular, I watched the 4 goals that Cork conceded. They're going to have to stop that straight away. If I take Stephen Bennett's goal, caught a ball over a wing back, turned, made his way straight to the 21, no one in his way, and put the ball in the bottom corner. First goal, for Waterford. Bowen went into a man being marked by three, turned, threw the ball to Patrick Curran. He put the ball in the net. They're simple goals. You know, Cork can't be giving away those. Having said that, I was something I only realised. Cork played very poorly and Waterford played out of their skin. There's no doubt about that. But when young Kingston, Shane Kingston came on, he got a couple of scores. And there were 317 to 22 points down. There were only 4 or 5 points off Waterford with about 10 or 12 minutes to go. So he needs to close down the thing. I'm actually tipping Cork tomorrow, so you can write that on your page.
Sean
the far side
says
as well.
Cork.
Okay. I just think that from a Limerick point of view, and I'm not going to name him, Declan, we're tied for time. They have all the ingredients of and they've won 3 of the last 4 All-Irelands. You know, that can't go on forever. I just think that Cork's insistence on this short puck-out strategy, they are getting better at it. I'd like to see the Limerick half-back line defending, going back towards their own goal rather than facing long, high puck-outs, because if that's the way Cork play, Limerick will win this, but I'm tipping Cork in that game.
I know it's round robin and you're a great fan of the round robin system, but I for one would love if that was a straightforward knockout game in Páirc Uí Chaoimh tomorrow. There'd be 45,000 in the ground, it'd be absolutely rocking, do or die hurling. It may come a little bit later, it'd be interesting to see. Finally, on the hurling section, Sean, we have to mention Waterford and Tipperary. This is an intriguing clash tomorrow. Waterford league champions, of course. Ballygunner players have All-Ireland club medals in their back pockets as well. Confidence certainly not lacking amongst the Daisha at the moment. Something it might be in Tipperary, do you think? Serious pressure on them coming into tomorrow's game.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And Tipperary are very, very, very proud people. Had a look at the Tipperary team. I mean, you know, they're going to have Cathal Barrett and Ronan Maher at the back. I mean, so they're going to have 15 as well. They're short Bubbles and they're short Callan and all these lads. But and up front, they're still going to have Jake Morris, Jason Ford, Dan McCormack and Michael Breen. Tip won't have a bad team. And do you know what, Dick? This is a very dangerous one for Waterford. They're after having a small bit of celebration. They're getting goals to beat the band. They got 5 against Wexford. They got 4 in the league final. If Tipperary come with a very mean approach, which they probably will, close down space, which is I'm consistently saying that, you know, there could be very little in this with 10 minutes to go, but I do expect Waterford to win this as well.
I was just going to say, is it the Daisha or is it the Premier for you on that one? You're tipping Waterford.
No, I would tip Waterford. And I think the home advantage will be a big help.
And you're tipping Waterford to go further this year?
I think they have a great manager, Declan, to be honest with you, and the fact that, you know, Tipperary were looking for him the minute he was free, but he decided to stay with Waterford rather than go back to his home county, so he must have seen something. And if you go back to the last 2 years, the one that gave Limerick the 2 best games, I would have felt was Waterford. I think Limerick are gone back, that's under league form, that might change, but from a Waterford perspective they have definitely improved. One frightening thing, and I'll finish on this, in Waterford played out of their skin the last day. They didn't have Páirc Mahony and they didn't have Austin Gleeson on the field.
Frightening. Yeah, indeed, it is. So, Sean Lane's lucky 15 then this afternoon from a GAA perspective is Dublin, Wexford, Cork and Waterford. The other game is Kilkenny taking on Westmead there. And we must mention the Dublin Miners. They're in action this afternoon as well. They play Kilkenny in Nolan Park at 12 noon.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stalking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.